gentlemen, and welcome to another FlyAnglersOnline.com podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Hugo Gibson. This week's interview is somebody very special to Fly Anglers Online. Not only has he been a longtime member and chat room host, but he's also a sponsor of Fly Anglers Online. I'm sure some of you know who I'm talking about, Mr. Ron Cusey. He is world-renowned for his bamboo rod-making abilities. He should be pretty good at it by now. He's been doing it since he was a teenager. I posted a thread online to see if you guys had questions that you would like me to ask him, and several of you just wrote back, let him talk. And that's kind of the format that I followed this week. Really, really enjoyed my conversation with him, and I hope you guys enjoy it as well. Please help me welcome Mr. Ron Cusey. Hi, Ron. How are you doing this afternoon?
I'm great, except for the top of walk here. It's about 95 degrees.
Oh, goodness. Well, it was the high yesterday here was 54, and it's about 71 today, so it's cold here. They're talking about a mild winter, but I don't know that we're going to see that in this part of the country. Let's get started with your beginning. Now, it's my understanding that you started in the bamboo rod industry when you were a teenager.
Right. What happened was, during the Second World War, you couldn't get fishing tackle of almost any kind. Everything was for a war effort. And my father and I, we make a few rods, and we were selling them to hardware stores used to sell fly rods.
Right.
And so I would help him when I was 12, 13 years old. We fished together, and it was a hobby of making a few rods. So, when I was 14, he died, and I was making rods, and our customers were still buying rods from me, and he was gone, so I was making them and furnishing them with a few fly rods, and it sort of just stuck into being a business without any intention of it. So when I was 14, 15, 16 years old, I was making rods, and that's how I got into it.
Wow.
Just by accident.
So, from there, I'm guessing you had your own shop when you were making these rods.
Well, he had a shop, and I just inherited his shop.
And then from there, where did you go? How long until you got with the Leonard Rod Making Company?
Well, I was in Rochester. Rochester is an area of fly fishing and bird hunting. That's the big things up there, pheasant hunting and fly fishing. And I made them there for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, in 1970, I don't know how they found out about me, but anyway, H.L. Leonard called up and asked if I wanted to work there. That was sort of a lifelong dream. So I said, sure, and they offered me a vice presidency, H.L. Leonard. I worked there. I ran the store. I took care of retail, wholesale business, made some rods, done some repairs, and all of a sudden I was just a Leonard employee doing what Leonard employees did.
How many years were you affiliated with the H.L. Leonard Company?
From 1970 until 1981. Not a real long time, but substantial.
Well, yeah. So what? Why did you leave?
Well, we owned the business.
Mm-hmm.
Leonard was owned by Ted Simrell, Pat Mills, and myself at one time. And then they were bought by a university society down in New Jersey. We sold it to them, and we all continued working there. And then they sold it to Johnson's Wax. And Johnson's Wax is a big company. They didn't know what they bought.
Uh-huh.
In other words, they had no idea. They thought they bought a fishing rod company that could be sold in Walmart or something like that. And this wasn't going in the direction that I wanted to see it going. So I left and started business myself in 81.
How did you build your business back up from there? Do you have repeat customers, or is it,
I had customers that I had been making rods for quite a few years with my father, and then he died, and I continued making rods.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't advertise, and people would just call up and order a rod.
So mostly word of mouth then?
Right.
It's pretty incredible to think where you started and where you are today. I mean, you're, for lack of a better term, a living legend in the bamboo world. To me, it's really, really neat to be able to go back in time and hear some of the history on the sport that I love so much. And
well, I've been doing this for a long time. I was doing it when I was about 12, 13 years old, and I'm now 76, so that is a long time.
Now, we were talking just briefly before we started the interview about people wanting to know how you go about selecting a rod for the kind of fishing that you're going to be doing.
Well, graphite and glass are great materials. Yeah, I like it bamboo, but graphite and glass, and I don't think that you have to have a special rod for a special place. If you're fishing for panfish, well, then you want a light, delicate little rod. If you're fishing for big trout, some of the western states offer big trout, then you need a little bit stronger rod, a little strength to it.
Right.
You just have to find out where you're going to be doing most of your fishing and select a rod that is appropriate for how long is your cast going to be, how big are your fish, how big are tippets. If you're going to fish for steelhead all the time, of course you don't use a little three-weight on steelhead. it's just common sense. And if you're new at it, the best place to go is join a club that has members who have a wide range of experience and use their information for what you're going to do.
A lot of people select rods based on the rod's feel, how it feels to them. Is that a good way to go about selecting a bamboo rod, or?
That's the best way. If a rod don't feel right, and if it don't cast good in your hands, it's not a rod for you. You don't want to bite the rod. You want to enjoy using it.
So in your expert words, what is it about bamboo that makes it such a special material compared to, let's say, graphite or fiberglass? There's always that debate, graphite versus bamboo versus graphite versus bamboo. What is it about bamboo that really speaks to you?
Well, a bamboo rod is something you can enjoy just owning and seeing and using. And there is the factor of it's a very traditional way material to use from. Now, bamboo is actually very strong. You know, they build scaffolding over in China and Japan out of bamboo, you know, 20, 30 stories high, because it's a very, very strong material.
Mm-hmm.
And it don't break very easy, but you can't abuse it.
Right.
I think that the average, I read someplace that the average bamboo rod has a life expectancy of 30 or 40 years.
Wow.
I don't think there's too many graphite rods with that kind of life expectancy.
I can tell you from experience, several of mine haven't lasted even a fifth of that.
For certain kinds of fishing, I think that graphite or glass is better than bamboo. But, you know, I'm talking about very large fish. On boat fishing, people do fish bamboo out of boats, but I think that your glass or graphite is better there. You should use common sense in what you use a bamboo rod. A bamboo rod is best rivers like the Yellowstone or the Beaver Kill around here, which are not tiny little rivers, but I wouldn't want to fish too much salt water with bamboo.
You're mentioning some different rivers. What are some of your favorite rivers to fish?
Oh, well, I fished for a few western rivers, but not too many.
Uh-huh.
So I have to talk about eastern rivers because they're what I normally fish. I like the Beaver Kill or the Little Weemock,
mm-hmm.
the east and west branch of the Delaware itself. Now, people think that eastern rivers are small streams. They're not.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Delaware is at places that's 100 yards across.
Yep.
Ooh, 50 feet deep.
Wow.
It's actually, it's a big river. East and West Branch are smaller, And they're pretty sizable rivers. Beaver Kill is maybe 100 feet wide through most of its area. So we have big rivers in the east, a lot of the western rivers are very sizable too.
Yeah.
Each area will have different size streams, and of course your bigger streams, you probably want bigger rods because you can bend your line better with longer rods.
Mm-hmm.
If you got to make 50 or 60 foot or even a 70 foot cast, your bigger rods will do that better.
I can imagine over all the years that you fished, you've caught probably hundreds of thousands of fish, but what's your most memorable one?
The one that I'm catching at the moment.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fish fisherman. On the chat room, sometimes people are talking, everybody's talking, 15, 20 pound fish. I don't catch 15, 20 pound fish.
Mm-hmm.
I can be very happy spending an afternoon fishing and having to fish within a range of 10 inches to 15 inches.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need huge fish, although sometimes you are unexpectedly catch big fish.
Just to give you a bit of history, I broke my wrist in June and had to have surgery on it, so I missed out most of the summer fishing. And I've been itching now that I can actually use my left hand to strip the line in. I've been itching to go fishing like crazy. And I went out. There's a little stream in the mountains about 10 minutes south of where I live. I live in Havre, Montana. It's in north central Montana. And I caught, I'm not a number counter, but I caught well over 100 fish. I don't know exactly how many, but it was just one after the other after the other. And they were all relatively small. There were a few 14, 15, 16-inch fish thrown in there, but most of them were 10 inches or under. Good grief. It was absolutely some of the most fun I've ever had on a stream. It was just wonderful.
Great day.
It really was. And I took my wife out the next day on Sunday. She was a little upset with me, because I went out and I caught all those fish. We hadn't had very much luck this summer, the little bit of fishing that I'd done. And so she went out with me on Sunday, and we had another day just about like that. So that was, yeah, I don't know. For me, it's more about the entire experience than it is catching a big fish.
If I could think of a fish, I can think of one day I was fishing on the east branch of the Delaware, and there wasn't any fish rising except one, and he was rising pretty steady, and I fished for him probably for a half hour, and I couldn't rise him, so I wound it off downstream or upstream, don't remember which, and rested him a little bit, and he come back, and he was back rising again.
Mm-hmm.
So I fished for him for 45 minutes or so on, couldn't get him to take. I wound it off and left him alone for another hour and went back, and finally he took.
Yeah.
And I caught him. And that was one of the best experiences I ever had, fishing for 3 or 4 hours over one fish. And it was such a successful feeling when I finally did take him.
That's fantastic. I love stories like that. On one of the threads that one of our members posted, I don't know if you remember a gentleman, he goes by Parnelli.
Parnelli? Sure, I know Parnelli.
Yes. Well, he said for me to tell you that he still thinks the world of you and to say hello, and he really enjoyed the time that you guys spent together at that fish-in.
Yeah, Parnelli, I always enjoy talking with Parnelli.
I tell you, I am really excited. I'm going down to the Idaho fish-in here on the, it starts on the 18th of September. And I've made the Florida fish in a couple of times, fishing saltwater. I really enjoy saltwater fishing, but I am so excited to get to this Idaho fish in to meet some of the folks that, I mean, I've been chatting on there for a while, and I have yet to meet a lot of the people that are regulars, and I'm going to get to do that in a couple of weeks here. So it's just so nice to belong to a fishing site that has such great people.
Great time. It's a great thing to go to a fishing because you meet face to face a lot of people who are only your boy, just typing things in.
Mm-hmm.
And they're generally quite different than what you anticipated them to be.
Yeah. Absolutely, they are. They really are, yeah. I've certainly made a few lifelong friends out of it, and that is, it just goes to speak volumes for the kind of people that, that fly fishing will, you know, you do. You meet the best kind of people.
That's for sure. I've never met anybody I don't like in a fishing.
Yeah, I have to agree.
They're all worthwhile.
Well, let's talk about how you developed some of your tapers?
My tapers are somewhat like Leonard because I, or Jim Payne.
Mm-hmm.
I am a great reviewer for both of those establishments, and most of my tapers are pretty much like Payne and Leonard. So maybe I'm not inventive enough.
Well, I don't know about that.
They're tweaked a little bit. They're very close to Payne and Leonard tapers.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems to be working, and I don't know. Best I know, you don't fix something if it's not broken.
Yeah, they work well. They work very, very well. You know, I've been fishing for so long. As I say, I'm 76, and I started actually fishing when I was very young.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the best part of my life is spending what time I can on the river.
Tell us a couple fish stories then.
A fish story?
Yes.
Okay. When I was 16, I got my driver's license. We were fishing a stream called the Wacky Creek south of Rochester. That was the stream we fished a lot. There was a farmer who owned probably a mile of stream frontage, and he had it all posted and wouldn't let anybody on it because the fishermen would constantly let his cows out. He was a dairy farmer. Carl was a good friend of mine, so we stopped in and seen this farmer and asked him if we could fish his land, if we would not let the gates open, make sure his cows stayed where they belong, and in the meantime, we would help him around the farm. So the deal was we'd come to help him with his haying and take his cows out, bring them back in, milk them every now and then. So we'd done something for the privilege of fishing the stream. So we were fishing that and having a good time because no one else was fishing it. And but we remembered back when we used to poach his property and go at night and we caught bigger fish. So now we approached him with the idea, could we fish at night there? And he said, we could, but the first time a gate was left open or something, that would be it.
Mm-hmm.
So we started fishing there at night. And I remember one night we pulled up at the place where we normally park. And Carl was fishing the pool above me, and I was fishing the riffle below it. And all of a sudden, I heard Carl say, in a loud whisper, like, Ron, help, help. What do you need help? And he was saying, Ron, help, help, help. I figured, being a feisty 16 or 17-year-old kid, I'm going to go charging up there and see what's bothering Carl.
Mm-hmm.
And I get up where he was fishing, and I see his flashlight run across the field. There was a pasture, there were some cows in it, and his flashlight would go this direction, then he would turn around and go in another direction, and I could hear his hearty reel go zing, zing, zing. So I get over there, and Carl had hooked a cow in her shoulder. It was a big stream, and he hooked the cow in the shoulder. And what he was doing was chasing the cow, because he didn't want the farmer to find the next morning his fly in the cow's shoulder.
Yeah.
So that I don't know what the other cows thought we wanted to do to that poor one that had been hooked. But she was trying to get with the herd, and they would run away from her because they didn't want any part of her because they didn't trust her with two guys chasing her in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
So finally, we kind of cornered her in the corner of this pasture, and fortunately she had a halter on, so we grabbed the halter, unhooked the cow, her shoulder was bloody, we took her over to the stream with our baseball cap, washed her all up. farmer never said a word, so maybe he never knew about it, but that was an exciting night with a cow.
So what taper do you use for cow fishing?
I don't know. We were fishing at night, and we were fishing for streamers, looking for bigger fish, and so we were probably fishing something like an 8 foot or a 7 or 8. We used bigger rods back then.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, it was an interesting thing, catching a cow.
That's got to be.
Well, Carol caught this cow on the back ass, too.
Yeah, but still.
Yeah, she was, the cows would just wander around the pasture. One was right behind him, and he hooked him with the back ass. Yeah.
Wow.
So it was interesting, that's for sure.
Well, have you ever done any traveling outside of the country to fish?
Iceland.
How was that?
Oh, that was terrific.
Where did
you... Very fantastic. You know, that was salmon fishing.
Right.
And that, of course, is... That's a very exciting thing. And when you get the chance to go to a place like Iceland, it's a different kind of land. There's no trees to speak of. And the people are different and very nice. And the streams are loaded with fish.
Yeah.
And, 15, 20 pound fish are not unusual. And that's pretty exciting.
That would be, I would love to do something like that. I did a little bit of salmon fishing when I was practicing in Michigan on the Pierre Marquette River and the Manistee River, but man, to travel to an exotic location like that would be a kick in the pants, I think.
Yeah, I didn't like the 13 or 14 hour plane ride. I didn't like that too much.
I can't sleep in cars and on planes and things like that, so anytime I travel a long way, I'm tired when I get there. Mm-hmm. Now, is the water there private or is it public? How does that work? Do you remember?
Just about all private.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, the farmer who owns land that the stream goes through, he owns the land, the stream, the water, the fish in the water, but he can't fish it himself. He has to get a permit to fish his own water. At least that's what I understand.
Do they practice a lot of catch and release over there, or do they keep a lot of what they catch?
They keep a lot of what they catch, particularly the Europeans.
Uh-huh.
I found that they never release the fish. They just do it.
Hmm.
The fish was some German fishermen who were good, nice people, and
mm-hmm.
good fishermen, but they didn't release a fish.
Wow. That's...
I mean, we don't understand how good we have it. In this area here, this is the Catskills, and you go, and there's a stream, and if it's not posted, you can go fish it. No one said anything. We just accept that.
Mm-hmm.
Not in Europe.
We are privileged to have as much natural resource
and,
access
and
as we have.
And freedom to use it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, sir, I would like to thank you so, so much for taking the time out of your day to sit and chat with me.
No problem whatsoever. I enjoyed it.
I really did, too. And I know there's a lot of people that are excited to hear your take on trout fishing and bamboo rods. So thank
and
you again.
And catching cows.
And catching cows, yeah. Yes. I wonder how many people are going to go out and try that now.
Yes. Well, we really thought that. Farmer would come out, and the cows being chased around all night weren't going to give any milk or something. That worked out fine.
Oh, that is just a hilarious story.
Thank you for interviewing me.
It's been my pleasure. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I am so sorry to say that is all that I have for you this week. Thank you so much for joining me for another FlyAnglersOnline.com podcast. And thank you very much to Mr. Ron Cusey. It was such a pleasure to have a little bit of time with him this afternoon on the phone. What a wonderful man to talk to. I hope everybody gets the opportunity to sit down over a cup of coffee with him and share some memories. Stay tuned for a couple more podcasts coming up. I've got Dan Blanton and Dave Whitlock lined up, and these should be just fantastic. I've already got some great questions from you guys online. Keep them coming. I really, really appreciate everybody's input. Makes my job a lot easier. Until then, folks, tight lines.